Hello again, bird fans. It's time for Vox Pop on this Wednesday, June 15th. I'm Ray Graff. Yes, we're discussing birds today. Yes, Rich Guthrie is here. Yes, he's an experienced birder. He's on the air, often with us. Yes, he brought his friend Nancy Castillo of Wild Birds Unlimited in Saratoga Springs. Yes, if you have a bird question, call us now. 800-348-2551. 800-348-2551. You can also comment on our Vox Pop page on the website, wamc.org/VoxPop, don't you know? You can check in on Facebook, facebook.com/WAMC Radio. Tweet us at WAMC Vox Pop or email voxpop@wamc.org. But yes, remember the phone number on a call-in program, 800-348-2551. It's birds coming up. Hello again. Welcome back to Vox Pop, WAMC's live afternoon call-in talk show. I'm your host, Ray Graff. We're discussing birds today, and Rich Guthrie is here to help answer your questions. Rich is a veteran birder, a former NCON specialist, a former compiler of the Catskill, New York Christmas bird count, noted after-dinner speaker, summer stock performer. He is a resident avian expert. Also joining us is Nancy Castillo, owner of Wild Birds Unlimited in Saratoga Springs. Our number to call is 800-348-2551, 800-348-2551. As I mentioned at the outset, you can comment on Facebook if you wish, facebook.com/WAMC Radio, or tweet us at WAMC Vox Pop. Or email voxpop@wamc.org. But again, our number is 800-348-2551. Rich and Nancy, welcome to the show.
Hi, Ray. Good
Hi,
to
Ray.
Be here.
Nice to have you both back with us today. And before we get to your news, which is great, you have a new book to talk about, I want you to identify a bird for me. Sitting out on the patio, having a couple of Stella Artois, delicious beers and cans, I noticed a little gray bird on the cable TV line that goes up to the pole at the back of the house. Very close. Little loud little guy. And kind of black little, I don't know if they were black markings, but some black spots on the wings. What was that thing?
Well, maybe a little more information.
Come on, Rich.
How big?
Small.
Small, small.
Smallish. Very small.
Any other markings? So it's just gray with a couple of marks on the wing?
I'd had a couple of beers. I can't remember.
Well, small.
Tail? Cocky? Like tail kind of?
Yeah. It was a little pronounced like that. Not pointing up, but you definitely noticed the tail.
Uh-huh. Well, that would suggest that it was a wren.
Okay.
They have that habit of raising their tail like that.
Are they common?
Oh, yeah. A nice backyard bird. The house wren especially, or the Carolina. But those don't come across as gray to me. They're more brown. And
no,
the black markings wouldn't be conspicuous. The other possibilities would be a titmouse, a tufted tit. But they're gray. But they don't have black markings on the wings that would jump out.
No.
So how many beers did you have?
I had two, but it wasn't a strong jet black, but there were some darker parts to the wing.
Well, I'll tell you what. I'm going to look it up in this book.
Ah, wow. So you have no answer, but you have a new book. And what is this new book?
This is Birds of New York.
Oh, nice.
It's just out. I have to be careful. The ink is still wet.
Is it really?
Absolutely. It's just onto the shelves. And Birds in New York by Corey Finger, which local boy, Stogarty's guy. And it's, I just got it yesterday.
Well, the photographs are lovely. The photographs are by Brian
Small.
Yeah.
Who's a brilliant photographer. So
it's a lavishly illustrated little book, and it's handy enough that you could just put in a glove compartment of your car.
If you're in New York, and this is the thing to have. If you're going to visit New York, this is the thing to have. If you want to come to New York for whatever reason.
Yeah.
So I'm going to
come for the taxes and stay for the birds.
I'm going to go with the tufted titmouse on the thing there.
Okay, you think so?
Yeah.
What kind of sound does that make?
He has the mnemonic, the way of remembering the sound, is the way I learned it when I was a kid, way back when. It sounds like it's saying, Peter, Peter.
Yeah. And it's pretty loud.
Oh, very loud.
So, do you have a picture of said tufted titmouse?
I absolutely do.
That's the one.
Bingo.
Nice work.
Oh, Corey, right. Good job, Corey, right, getting it in your book and having
one.
It out there.
Guthrie, let's go to the phones. 800-348-2551. Rich Guthrie and Nancy Castillo here as our bird experts. Let's go over to line one. And Bill in Nassau. Bill, you're first.
Hey, I tried to get in the last time Rich was on, and I just couldn't get through. He's a very popular guy.
Yes, he is.
Well, you're number one today.
You got a rare bird sighting.
I called it. Yes. Okay. About a month ago in our backyard, which is not near water, we had a strange-looking bird walking around and looked it up, and it is a yellow-crested night heron.
A yellow-crowned night heron.
Yellow-crowned.
Really?
Okay, that sounds right.
And you're right, it is rare.
Night heron. We went to the Cornell site and couldn't find it there, but then there was like a rare birds drop down. And the last one sighted was in Ghent, New York in 2012. Really,
all right. And so you're in NASA. So that's not that far from Ghent, right?
But even so, the yellow-crowned night heron. I'm going to throw in a little caution here.
Oh, boy.
That's all right. This is what we do. First of all, I want to suggest you and anybody else, if you want to share that, eBird is the way to go. EBIRD.org. That's a Cornell University website, interactive website, where you can enter your yellow-crowned night heron or tufted titmouse or black-capped chickadee.
I see.
And that's number one. But go ahead.
My wife did that already.
Oh, good. Well,
And the odd thing was, we don't live near water, and it was eating night crawlers.
Eating night crawlers.
Well, they do that.
They must have been very moist.
Well, they're a night heron, and that's probably high on their menu.
Yeah.
Yeah, you know, fits their bill,
well,
so to
great.
Speak.
Well, congratulations.
And I won't tie you up, but just two quick things. The albino red-tailed hawk down by the Columbia County Airport is still there. I hadn't seen him in a couple of years, but I saw him this spring.
And anybody who would like to know more about that, that's off Route 9H in Columbia County, New York. A beautiful white red-tailed hawk. Very scarce critter.
Hard to see now with the trees are all filled in, but in the spring before the trees filled out, I saw them a couple of times.
Very, very nice. Well, I'm going to urge you to try to input that yellow-crowned night heron report back into eBird. Because
I think Phil said his wife already did that.
Yeah, I know, but I'm saying try it again because it filters through me.
And you deleted Bill's wife.
I do not delete. Not my job.
Sorry about that, nope. Bill. We apologize for Rich's behavior.
No problem. And one more quick thing. On 787 on Friday, I saw four bald eagles up soaring together over Cohoes.
Wow.
There you go. It's probably a recently fledged couple of young and mom and dad.
Bill, thanks a lot for the call. Our number is 800-348-2551, 800-348-2551. So the new book is already coming in handy on the program.
Very handy. Like to have it.
I assume you can get this at Wild Birds Unlimited. Now.
Absolutely.
Ah,
in
see?
Stock.
All right, let's go back to line number two, and let's go to another Bill. This one's a Niskayuna. Bill, you're on.
Hi. I have a nest of robins. They were just hatched about a week and a half ago, and it's right on the windowsill of the bedroom at our house.
Mm-hmm.
So we have a kind of a front row seat to everything going on.
Excellent.
And I wanted to ask you a couple of behavior questions about these robins. Of course, they're furiously feeding the babies that are growing by leaps and bounds every day. And there are two, of course, colored the same. But one of them is huge and one of them is small. Is it likely that the male is the larger of the two or no?
No, not likely the case. And you're sure they're all robins. Sometimes it's not likely that a cowbird, which will put its eggs into another bird's nest, leaving the raising of the young to the host species. And they tend to be larger than the birds in the nest, but they usually pick on smaller bird species for that very reason, so they can dominate. So are you sure they're all the same? I mean, the young robins have little flecks, speckles on them, and black and white markings on the face and the like?
Yeah, they're definitely all four robins. Of course, I guess that's fairly typical. Am I right that four eggs are laid by a mother robin?
Yeah, that's very true. But the unusual thing about that is that they usually hold off incubation until all the eggs are in the nest. So you don't have this.
And that,
so they all hatch out at the same time.
That's what they did.
Yeah.
They came along, the first one came and it was a couple of days. And then after that, it was almost like one a day.
Yeah.
And then, the incubation, and then they all hatched pretty much at once. There was one laggard that took more than 24 hours. And we were worried, you know, that it wasn't going to make it. But it made it out.
There you go. Very fascinating. Cool. You're very fortunate. Take a couple of pictures, and I'll have an email address if you don't
mind. They're on Facebook. I've been taking pictures and videos and posting them every day on Facebook.
Nice.
Okay, well,
cool.
Send me a link, and I'd like to have a look at that. And also, you know, if you don't mind, I'll share that and so that people can watch on Facebook as well. Is that all right?
Yeah, will do. But the question that I have for you is, you said that the larger one is not the male, the larger one is probably the female?
No, Todd, you can't tell at this stage, and size will not matter in that case. Male and female robins.
Talking about the parents, not the children. The
parents. I understand. That will not be a determinant identification. So they should all be the same size, boys, girls, males, females, don't matter.
All right, fair enough.
Okay.
Okay, well, there's one parent that's extremely large, and there's one parent that's very small. And the large one is the one who's carrying most of the food.
Well, get some pictures.
He brings the food. I have the pictures. And he brings the food up and gives it to the babies, and then the other one, the smaller parent, comes up, knocks the big one out of the way, and robs the food out of the baby's mouth.
Yikes.
Well, I think there's maybe more than what meets the eye going on here because it just doesn't add up. Now I'm very interested in having you connect. I'll give the email address.
Do it right now, Rich, because we'll take
a break.
Okay,
it's Easy Pickings. Richard P., as in Peter, Guthrie, all one word, richardpguthrie@gmail.com.
All right. We thank you for
the
call.
I'd love to see those pictures because now we've got a mystery here.
Okay, this is very interesting. So do you think it's another species of bird?
That would be hugely unusual. So
could it be a different pair?
No.
No? Some marital strife going on there? Custody battle?
No.
No.
Well, by the way, Rich Guthrie's email, if you didn't catch it, is now on our Vox Pop Birding page for today.
Woo-hoo.
So you will find Rich's email contact info there. We'll take a short break. 800-348-2551 is the telephone number. And we'll be right back with Nancy Castillo and Rich Guthrie and your calls on Bites.
Support for WAMC comes from Interactive Media Consulting, Saratoga Springs, New York, providing logo and print design, web development, and digital marketing throughout the capital region and beyond, marketing creative and business ideas since 1996. imediaconsult.com. Amherst Copy and Design Works, offering printing and copying, sign making and design services, from booklets to stationery and labels to lawn signs in downtown Amherst, Massachusetts. amherstcopy.com. Agricultural Stewardship Association, helping people conserve farmland in the Upper Hudson Valley. We conserve good farmland for good forever. agstewardship.org. Harold's Ice Cream, Thorne's Marketplace, downtown Northampton, Massachusetts. Over 300 flavors of handcrafted dairy and dairy-free ice creams, cakes, hot fudge, and more. Harold's.com. Curtis Lumber, featuring Anderson Windows, Therma True Doors, Owens Corning Shingles, Valspar Paints, Cabot Stains, and more at 21 locations in New York and Northern Vermont, CurtisLumber.com. And Northeast Solar in Hatfield, Massachusetts, helping Pioneer Valley residents live more sustainably with solar power for home, business, or farm. Keep solar local, Northeast-Solar.com.
You know who that is on guitar, Rich? You know who that is?
Tufted Titmouse?
No, it's our local guitar hero, Chuck DeLoy. Listen to that guy play. He's good. He's real good. Our number here is 800-348-2551, 800-348-2551. Rich Guthrie is here. He's our bird expert. And Nancy Castillo comes every two or three shows, and she is with Wild Birds Unlimited, the owner, in fact. And, Rich, we've been following the arc of your career here with the after dinner speaking. Now you've done a presentation on Cuba, and by now it's got to be getting really good.
Well, it's booking.
Oh, really?
Yeah, we're out there.
It's very hot.
Yeah, tonight, as a matter of fact, Coxsackie, New York, at the library, the Hermits Memorial Library in Coxsackie at 6:30.
So you're going to be playing Coxsackie,
Cuba.
So next stop, what? Middletown?
Catskill.
Oh, Catskill.
Yeah.
Oh, that's great.
And an invitation. If you're out there and you have your local library or club or school group or reading group or whatever, the program, Cuba, birds, people, cars, and cigars.
And you're free, right?
I am free. All I ask you, you know, if I have to go somewhere far,
yeah,
you know, let's split the gas cost or something.
Oh, that's nice. That's nice.
I enjoy doing it. Standing up there, do my little soft shoe.
So you go basically to little workshops and work out some of the details and go to stand-ups and just kind of work out the material?
Yeah, walk and talk.
So that's good. So it was maybe a little shaky in the beginning, but it's really good now, right?
Oh, no, it was solid.
Oh, it was solid all the way?
Oh, absolutely. The only problem was the equipment wasn't working. You know how that is.
Oh, believe me, I know how that is. And by the way, Zach, our engineer, is doing a heck of a job today.
Yeah.
All right, let's go back to the phones. Let's see if I remember where we are here. Line 3 and Roscoe in Kingston. Roscoe, you're on.
Hello. I have a marital discussion I was hoping you could settle.
Okay, Nancy,
we have lots of finches in the yard, mm-hmm. and according to the book, they're either purple finches or house finches.
Okay.
And one says they're rosier, and one says one's a little redder, but even within the group we see, some are almost orange-red, some are rosy-red. Then it's said to look for the Coleman. One is curved, one is straight, but again, there's so much variability. Mm. Is there a simple way to tell which is which?
Yeah, you're in Kingston?
Yes.
House finches.
House finches.
Okay.
Really? Why? Purple finches not in Kingston?
Right.
Where are they?
They're up in the Adirondack, up by Nancy's place. Yeah, Saratoga Springs and north.
Well, that's not that far away. I mean, why couldn't one get on?
It's all about habitat. House finches, houses. Purple finches, purple mountain majesty.
I say take a picture of it, Roscoe, and send it to Rich Guthrie because he's been wrong before.
No, I trust him.
No, we're good there.
I've listened for a long time. I trust what he says.
No, and as far as the color, there's a lot of variation, especially among house finches.
I noticed.
Rosy, more or less. More than less. But there's variation between the males and the females, and older males and younger males, and older females and younger females. So, it's a trick. But a safe bet. If they're around the house.
Okay.
I will
Quick
add
question
that.
In general. Some birds have tremendous sexual dimorphism, and others none whatsoever.
Right.
Is there a logic or a reason for that, or that's just the way things are? Bald eagles, for example, that you can't tell boy from girl typically.
You're absolutely right about that.
Perching birds.
Right. And there's a lot of overlap in rhyme and reason and exceptions and rules that are broken now and then. So typically the songbirds have the strong sexual dimorphism. Males are brightly colored, females are not. Waterfowl.
But do you know why?
Say that?
Do you know why? Roscoe wants to know why.
The guys want to be seen. They want to be seen. The females want to be quiet back at home. Because they're protecting.
Birds of prey almost have no difference.
Right.
Birds of prey that I can think of, they all look the same.
You're right about that. And but with the songbirds, the male is out there more or less drawing attention to himself and away from the nest, the eggs, the babies, and the young. So, and the female is back at the nest, incubating the eggs or taking care of the young, trying to be inconspicuous while he's out there being the sacrificial lamb, saying, "Here I am, come get me, mm-hmm. leave them alone." And the waterfowl, it's pretty much the same thing with the ducks, but not with the geese
sure, yeah,
and not
mallard
with the swans.
Is obvious, yeah.
Yep. The female is back there with the eggs in the grass, and the male is out there. But with birds of prey, it's interesting that the harrier, which is a bird that nests on the ground in the grass, the female is striped brown, that blends in with the grass, nice camo, and the male is brighter colored and lighter colored and is more conspicuous. So there are rules and there are exceptions.
Sure.
All right. Hey, thanks a lot for the call.
Thank you so much.
Have a good one. 800-348-2551 is our telephone number. Let's go over to Susan in Red Hook. Susan, you're on.
Thank you for taking my call. Good day, everybody.
Hi.
Hi, Susan.
This is actually a follow-up from a call last month. I had some bluebirds mating, and they had eggs. We discussed that, and, of course, they hatched. And they did fledge, finally, a little bit. I think earlier on the time frame, and I know that no predators got to them because we saw the babies still with their feathers. So now I went on the internet because I saw that and looked at several different bird sites and saw that possible that the bluebirds would have another round of babies.
Mm-hmm.
And but they said to remove the nest because they'll build up on top of the old nest, and sometimes predators can get to that because now the nest is higher up and closer to the hole of the bird box. So that's what we did. And then once we made sure that the fledglings had fledged, and so we removed the old nest, and then we noticed that within like a couple of days, we had tree swallows flying around, and now the bluebirds were fighting with the tree swallows. And I would say that started about 10 days ago, and now things are quieted down. Nobody claimed the nest. So was there something we could have, I mean, obviously next time we'll have another box for the tree swallows, but why did nobody win out, I guess is my question.
Okay.
That's a good question. And
why is there no activity in that box?
Perhaps the bluebirds felt that their job was done and moved on. It's really hard to say, Nancy.
Yeah. The competition.
But my question is, why didn't the tree swallows take over and start building? They obviously wanted. There was a pair. They were ready to take over that box. They went in into the box, and at different times I saw the bluebird on top of the box. Sometimes I saw the tree swallow on top of the box.
All that competition competition over one nest could have been too much for either of them, you know, to bother. You hit upon it right on the head, though, Susan, is saying next time have two boxes up. If you ever notice when you're driving along the thruway, you'll see two bluebird boxes, two boxes set within 10 to 20 feet of each other. And that's to allow that type of competition to go on. A bluebird will protect that one of the boxes from other bluebirds. The tree swallows will protect the other one from other tree swallows. And the two of them will reside and will nest within 10 to 20 feet of each other. So that, you know, for future or for the rest of this season, if you got another box up there, you might have, you know, success in both boxes.
Okay. Susan, thanks for the call. So those boxes that you see along the highway, those are bluebird boxes?
Oh, yeah.
Why just bluebirds? Isn't that preferential treatment?
Yes. It's a state bird. We love bluebirds.
Okay.
And they're low maintenance birds to have in Route 20 and Route 22. There are several bluebird nest box trails around the state, and a very successful program.
We heard from Barbara via email, whose subject heading is feeding suet and sunflower seeds. And her note says, feeling badly for stopping the bird buffet 2 weeks ago, but worried about bears. Miss my birds.
Well, a good move. Doesn't say where Susan is, does it?
No.
But anyway, yeah, if you have feeders out there and there are potential for bears in the neighborhood, game over. You really do not want even a hummingbird feeder. Keep it going. And a simple suet feeder by a string from a branch on a tree could very well work. But seeds, not so.
Okay.
They will spill on the ground, the bears will come around, and once they find it, they'll be back.
We are joined today by Nancy Castillo of Wild Birds Unlimited and our Rich Guthrie. And let's go to Steve in, I believe, Scotia. Steve, you're on.
Hey, I have a couple of wrens that put up a nest in my screened-in porch. They can get into the porch under a little gap in the bottom, and they had five chicks that hatched a couple of days ago. This morning, I found one of the adults dead on the porch. I'm assuming it flew into something. And I've seen the other adult around this morning and heard the other adult around this morning. But I'm curious as to two things. Is there an easy way to tell by looking at the one that I found? Is there an easy way to tell whether it's the male or the female? And then the second question is, will the other bird, the surviving one that still seems to be around because I am hearing it and seeing it, will that one continue to nurse these chicks?
The answer is yes to both questions. If you're hearing it singing, the wren song, then that's the male. And another way of checking is the female at this time of year will have what's called a remarkable feature called an incubation patch.
Okay.
Which is an area of bare feathers on the belly with that she parts and then will rest on the eggs or shelter the young, enabling the body heat to be directly transferred without the interference of the insulating feathers. It's a remarkable feature that female birds will have, and some incubating males will have a reduced version of that. And the adult will take care of the young.
Even the male,
oh yeah.
Okay.
They have a very strong instinct to that effect, and good luck with that. I'm sorry about the other one having perished, but it happens.
Yeah. Well, we were watching them over the last couple of days, and I was getting a toad that found its way onto the back porch out from behind one of the pieces of furniture, and when I moved the furniture, there she was on the... You know, on the floor of the porch behind the piece of furniture. So we were just a little concerned about the chicks. They're stuck up there though, and they're making a lot of noise whenever he comes around. So
well, good. He's got his work cut out for him, but it happens unfortunately in nature.
Sure.
So
Steve,
well, good
thanks
luck
a lot
them.
For the call. We appreciate it. 800-348-2551 is the number. Let's go over to Fran in Guilderland. Fran, you're on.
Thank you. I had something unusual happen at our house this year. We have been feeding the cracked corn and sunflower seeds for the birds. We have a glass feeder that has the squirrel cage around it. And on one of those exceptionally warm days, we had bees come in and literally get all the corn out of the feeder.
Bees.
It's that corn. The corn
the bees
is
bees like the corn.
Yes, the corn is sweet, and that's what's attracting them to that seed more than anything else is that cracked corn in there. The cracked corn can, you know, attract not only bees but some of your lesser desired critters, whether they're four-legged or winged. So, you know, dropping the cracked corn out of seed is not a bad idea for all those reasons.
So what sort of unwelcome four-legged and winged creatures are we talking about here?
Mice.
Oh, mice. Okay.
Yep.
Fair enough.
And then sometimes you'll have a little bit more of your house sparrow activity on cracked corn.
I see. Okay.
I, on the other hand, I'm a fan of cracked corn. It's cheap.
It's tasty.
And it's easy to spread on the ground where the blue jays and mourning doves and during the winter months, the sparrows will find it readily. And but in a tube feeder, I think the chance of it fermenting, turning sweet, and attracting the bees. That's
incredible.
Yeah.
All right.
It was absolutely fresh that morning.
Oh, really? Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Fresh that morning into your feeder, but you'd have no idea how long it had been wherever, you know, like wherever you purchase it from.
But I think that's the culprit, is that the cracked corn has been drew those bees in.
Yeah. Will it hurt the bees?
No.
It's just that it'll keep your birds from visiting the feeders while the bees are swarming around it.
We learn a lot about birds and bees on this program. Fran, thanks a lot for the call. 800-348-2551. This one came in via email from Stephanie, who says, I recently read the book The Bluebird Effect and was struck by how destructive human activity is to bird populations. How can the average citizen commit to helping birds? Are there local organizations that take volunteers without a science or wildlife background? And that's from Stephanie.
Absolutely. Well, first of all, there are a number of ways that ordinary folks, you and I, can help out. Number one is habitat. There are habitat preservation, backyard habitat improvement, wild native plants that produce flowers for the hummingbirds and the butterflies, as well as seed-producing plants and berry-producing plants that the birds can feed on. And also a simple thing like shade-grown coffee, where a critical part of a bird's life history is spent in the tropics. And if you can, if we can help improve the winter habitat for these birds by using shade-grown coffee rather than hillside denuded coffee, then all the better. Another one, and this brings me back to the Cuba issue, And that is Birds Caribbean is a conservation organization that promotes habitat preservation in the Caribbean islands, which are critically imperiled by overdevelopment and habitat destruction. BirdsCaribbean.org would be another good place to start with that kind of investigation.
Another thing, I'm glad you brought this up, because one of the things that I had on my notepad is something I wouldn't mind covering, is I've been a little bit on a rampage this spring with tree cutting and tree trimming and shrub trimming. Right now, and for about the last 3 or 4 weeks, and it'll continue for another month or month and a half or two, is the prime time that our birds are nesting.
Mm-hmm.
And they nest in cavities in trees, they nest in shrubs, they nest in, you know, open nests in trees. And we, as, you know, intending our yards, just need to be responsive and think before we do shrub trimming, before we do tree chopping down, and make sure that those cavities, that there isn't a cavity up in that tree that's occupied by birds, or that there isn't some bird nest within that shrubbery.
Interesting.
Just look within, see if something's there. Give them time. It's not a long cycle. Give them time to finish their nesting and then do our tree trimming. So that I've been, like I said, a little bit on a rampage.
I have a hard time believing you'd be on a rampage about anything. You seem fairly laid back. Yeah.
Oh, you
really?
Name the topic. Here
we
go.
We'll get some caffeine in there, and we'll see what happens. Nancy Castillo is our guest today, also joined by Rich Guthrie. Our number is 800-348-2551. We'll get back to the phones in just a moment.
Support for WMT comes from Baby Farm Historic Site, Rotterdam Junction, presenting Revolution, Living History Day, featuring historic reenactors, including militia, cooking and blacksmith demos, brewers, musicians, artisans, and more. SchenectadyHistorical.org. Grapes and Grains Wine and Spirits, East Greenbush, New York. Specializing in wine and craft spirits for more than 15 years, stocking single malts, bourbons, tequilas, and gins, grapesandgrainswine.com. Ashfield Stone, Shelburne Falls, Massachusetts. Quarry and fabrication, used for enduring landscapes and interiors, including countertops and floor planking. Rare and wonderful native stone of the Berkshires, ashfieldstone.com. Preservation League of New York State, offering EPIP, a revolving loan program to acquire, stabilize, and restore historic buildings in New York, so our past has a future. And Ninepin Cider Works, serving New York hard ciders made from locally sourced apples. Tasting room open Wednesday through Sunday at 929 Broadway, downtown Albany. Be revolutionary. Consider the apple. Ninepincider.com.
It is a crackling good bird show today. Rich Guthrie is our guest. He's always at a good average to above average level, but then we take it to the next notch when Nancy Castillo is here. Nancy is the owner of Wild Birds Unlimited in Saratoga Springs. What's the latest up at Wild Birds Unlimited, Nancy?
Oh, we've been just getting all kinds of report of young birds. Chickadees are hatching and leaving nests. Woodpeckers like crazy.
Yeah.
Bluebirds, doves, robins, just lots of babies.
And that brings to mind one of the happens every year is baby birds on the loose. If you see a little fledgling on the ground, if it can stand up on its own, it's fine.
Don't touch it.
Mom and Pop are right nearby, and they're going to take care of it. If it's on a yellow stripe in the middle of the road, you've got to do something.
Now, that's interesting. There was always that old conventional wisdom. We've all heard it since we were kids. Never touch it. Never touch a bird because the birds, mommy and daddy, will reject it at that point.
Back at the farmhouse, they said, don't bring that bird home here because.
Yeah.
Just trying to deter the kids from bringing. That's, I think, where the story started. But it's not true.
You want to wash your hands after you handle birds, though, right?
Maybe not. It's not as though there's pathogens. No, it's not. That's overblown. But the birds will, if you need to rescue a bird, do it cautiously and don't worry about it. The birds will not abandon the babies because you handled it.
Okay.
If you do find an injured bird, just want to put a plug in for our local wildlife rehabilitation group. They're called North Country Wild Care. It's an at-home volunteer group. They have a hotline. I don't have the hotline number with me.
Oh, my gosh, Nancy.
You can find it.
But, yep, just search
North
Country Wild Care. They do a great job, and they're busy as heck right now with all the babies out there and everything, but they do a great job.
And this will be true for the rest of the listening area in Massachusetts or Vermont and Connecticut. They're under the State Environmental Department as licensed rehabilitators, and they are dedicated people who, at their own expense, care for these genuinely orphaned birds. And the first thing they will say is, don't bring it here. Bring it, you know, leave it where mom and pop can take care of it.
All right. So Mary, Sean, and Patty have been on hold a very long time. We're going to get to them, but I see, Rich, you're waving notes at me. What do you want to talk about?
Oh, just a couple of things for this weekend coming up. The Hudson Mohawk Bird Club is having a field trip this weekend at Cherry Plains State Park in Rensselaer County, New York. Be there at 7 a.m. and join them. You can check them out at hmbc.net, HudsonMohawkBirdClub.net. And also the Capital District Audubon Society, each Saturday, this and the next, will be doing a field trip to Skodak Island State Park. And there you can meet at the parking areas at 7 a.m. And again, that's the Capital District Audubon Society.
Okay.
And also the Adirondack, Southern Adirondack Audubon Society is having a walk tomorrow, Thursday. Check out that on their website, Southern Adirondack Audubon Society.
Okay, and these will be guided, they'll sort of...
Absolutely, you'll have somebody there that will take you around, show you the birds, and tell you their names.
Fantastic. All right, now we move on to the big payoff for all those patient listeners who've been on hold almost the entire show. Mary in Bearsville, you're on.
Okay, can you hear me?
We can hear you. Can you hear us?
Great, yeah.
Okay.
Right outside is a catalpa, rotten.
Oh, I feel terrible. Mary, I'm going to put Mary
can
on.
Can you hear me?
Oh, yeah, try it again.
It's breaking up a lot.
What?
Your cell phone seems to be breaking up, Mary.
It's not a cell phone. Let me try again. Okay. Is this better?
No.
Try it now.
Okay. In front of my house is a catalpa. Can you hear me?
Yes. Are you on speakerphone?
Good. No.
Okay. Well, anyway, we heard you. You have a catalpa in front of your house. Go ahead.
That had a rotten hole, and so chickadees cleaned it out and seemed to be obviously nesting, and then in and out, I figured the babies had been born. And they were taking out the fecal sac, looked like a tiny diaper, right?
Yes. Mm-hmm.
Then didn't see them so much. And then suddenly wrens were going in and looked like they were cleaning out. We're going to take over. There are a lot of wrens here. Now the wrens are gone and the chickadees are back. So I have no idea. I never saw the babies. Hmm. And it's very visible where they are. So if the babies either were born and died or whatever, would they make another... Would they breed again, do you think?
Yes, it happens. And the fecal sac, it's interesting that you should mention that. This is nature's disposable diaper.
It's phenomenal.
It's a cute little thing, but it's all part of house cleaning and hygienics.
I understand. It's wonderful.
And as far as the wrens are, they are kind of nasty little critters. They will actually
aggressive. I like them, but they're very aggressive.
Aggressive, and they're actually they mistreat the babies of other birds. They'll actually kill the babies of other birds. And that deed done, the job was over, and then the chickadees came back and will recycle and produce another brood. So that sequence, best that I can determine, is maybe what's going on there in that catalpa tree.
Just quick question, Mary, about over what period of time did all this take place? You know, 2 weeks, 3 weeks, 4 weeks?
I would say a week, really.
Okay.
Yeah, a short period of time.
Okay.
But the wrens were obviously going to take over because they were cleaning out. But then what I saw was the chickadee back and taking out the fecal sac. So I couldn't figure that out if it's just cleaning up, because I can't imagine the babies would still be there if the wrens had been in and out.
Well, the fecal sacs would be taken out immediately. That isn't something that's left in the nest even, you know,
I understand that if the babies are there and born and and they're pooping and the sac gets taken out. But what I'm saying is that after the wrens were trying to clean out the nest so they could have it, then I saw the chickadee twice with fecal sacs.
Okay.
So I don't know.
Well, it sounds like the chickadees are either recycling or the wrens were not as completely destructive as they first appeared. And the sequence continues. So.
Okay. Well, Mary, thanks a lot for that call. And the password is fecal sac, apparently. Let's go to Gary in Poughkeepsie. Gary, you're on.
Yeah, hi. I've got a bird in my neighborhood. Last 2 or 3 years, I've been trying to identify it based on its song. I can't see it when I follow it. And it sounds like... And I have gone on... all over the place, Peterson Guides and Cornell Ornithology, and I can't find it. It seems to be coming back every year. Any idea?
Parrot.
First thought that comes to mind is a cardinal, just a variation of the cardinal song. Have you considered that? Is that a possibility? That would be a Poughkeepsie bird.
I've got lots of cardinals around here, but I could check it. That's not one of the songs I heard out of the various ones on the – I checked all the popular birds and all of their variations on Cornell, but I'll try it again.
Okay, try that because cardinals are very variable. And curiously enough, since you bring it up, I often say that the singing is the realm of the male. But with the cardinals, the females also sing. And it may be a distinctive feature on the female cardinal in your neighborhood.
Interesting.
So, I would go down that path and see what happens. And if you could get a recording of it, all the better.
And send the MP3 to you, Rich
Absolutely.
Guthrie.
Absolutely. Send it our way. We'll
work on
it.
What's your email again? Richard P. Guthrie.
Richard P. Guthrie, common spelling, you know, @gmail.com.
All right. Gary, thanks a lot for the call. Over to Sean and Kinderhook. Sean, you're on.
Hey, thanks for taking my call, guys. Listen, I've got a story. But it does have a question at the end.
All right.
Now, I used to live at this place that had an apple orchard in the back, and there used to be like a murder of crows there all the time. And my friends, they used to ask me, oh, my God, Joe, what are all these crows doing here? And I said, oh, they're waiting for me to die so they can take me to hell piece by piece.
Okay.
Anyway, long and short, I was coming down the thruway today, and a crow went to go get his last supper, and I felt terrible because... He had a piece of meat in his mouth from the roadkill. He come up, and I hit him with my windshield, and I killed him. And I felt awful because I love crows. And, I mean, other than the early morning when I'm trying to sleep and they annoy me, that's all fine and good, though.
All right.
The point I'm trying to get to is, do crows eat apples?
Yes.
They do?
Yeah.
Okay.
Why do you ask?
Well, I don't know. I mean, I would assume they're opportunists, obviously. But, I mean, like I said, today I got one, and I've been driving for almost 30 years. They've always went to get something, but they always seem to get out of the way.
They're very smart that way. Yeah.
He might have been having a bad day.
Unfortunately, today was not a good day, and I felt terrible about it. But I was just wondering... I mean, they'll eat pretty much anything then, apples too.
You're darn right they will. Yeah. They're probably the most omnivorous bird out there.
That's because they're smart. Hey, Sean, thanks a lot for the call. We appreciate it very much. And now we go to the extraordinarily patient and talented Patty and Otis. Patty, are you still with us?
I am, Ray, because I would never leave you.
Oh.
You're on.
So I was calling. We have a... great blue heron nest, and we have a large beaver pond in our backyard, and in one of the dead trees in the middle, we have a nest. And this year, for the first time, there were five pigs that hatched. We've only ever seen two or three before.
Mm-hmm.
And we watch them every day through the scope, and one was much smaller and weaker and seemed to be getting pushed around and pecked at by his older siblings. And then yesterday when we looked, there's only two of them left. And I'm wondering if would the siblings push each other out of the nest to get more food, or was it maybe a predator like an eagle or a hawk?
Or a great horned owl, which are voracious predators, especially something as exposed as a great blue heron on a nest, fledgling.
Right.
But
we have a lot of owls.
Yeah, I wouldn't be surprised. But the thing is... you have those. The great blue heron nest is one of the flimsiest, most precarious nests
really?
Out there. It's just
for such a huge bird.
That's the thing. It's such a huge bird, and they build this little flimsy platform of sticks that are laid on top of the topmost branches of a dead tree, out there exposed to the wind and the weather. It's incredible that they can actually incubate eggs and that the eggs should hatch and the baby should grow almost to full size in that crazy nest.
I mean, the birds are obviously very, very handsome and short on brains.
Right. We were wondering that, too, because that's why we were surprised when there was five, because we're like, wow, the nest usually can hold two or three. And then, of course, we've had a couple of storms, so maybe it was possibly they did get blown out. Is the heron parents, are the same ones coming back every year, and do they mate for life, or are they different herons?
Well, it's a hard question to answer. The answer generally is yes to both. Same guy, same gal, and they return every year. But, you know, life goes on. If something happens and one should disappear, then there'll be somebody else to fill the gap. So, they know your backyard. They know that beaver pond. And as long as those trees can support a nest, they'll keep returning.
All right. Hey, Patty,
yes,
thank
you. Last year we had a second couple that came and attempted to build a nest. I don't know if they were young and it was their first time, but it was the flimsiest nest ever, and it flattered like a week.
Well, it doesn't work that way.
Patty, thanks a lot for the call. We appreciate it. 800-348-2551 is the number. Over to line. We have 10 lines now. We have a new phone system.
My gosh.
Over to line 10. And John. Oops, wrong button. I probably hung up on him. Mr. Braggy. John, are you there in Selkirk?
Hello.
You're on. Okay, go
ahead.
Hello.
Hello.
Yeah, real quick. Hello.
Hello.
Yes.
You're on.
This is John.
Okay, John.
Let's see. Two quick comments, and I'll get somebody else on. Hummingbird feeders. I was nose-to-nose with a black bear hummingbird feeder underneath the eave outside our window to floor-to-ceiling windows in our living room. One night, I heard a noise out there. He's out there after the hummingbird feeder. My wife turned on the spotlight, and he's outside looking in right by the feeder, and I'm inside looking out. And it was like he's just as big as me.
Yikes.
They go after them. And also, early spring, before we even expected them, a bear out, grabbed our suet feeder, it's gone.
Yeah.
So they'll go after anything they can find. We've had so many instances where bears right up to our house and tearing off our siding looking for bugs, and you name it. Keep them away. Don't put any food out. Don't leave anything out. And you have a great show, and thanks for all your time.
Hey, John, have you seen a Bigfoot down there in Selkirk?
No Bigfoot.
No Bigfoot yet?
I don't live in Selkirk. I live in Greenville.
All right. Well, that's the perfect spot to see a Bigfoot. All right. Well, let us know if you see one, all right?
John, that's good advice. Yeah. I'm with you 100% on that.
Thanks for the call.
Don't mess with the bears.
Very quickly, let's go to Judy in Mount Washington, Mass. Judy, you're on.
Oh, great. Hi, Rich. We were in Bob Berman's class together.
Wow.
All right. Okay.
Yeah. This spring, for the duration of a month, and it seemed like an eternity, there was a robin that stood on the rearview mirror of my parked car and jumped off and banged into the window and kept doing this. I endlessly, every day, all day, the windshield, the car window, the house windows, the car was covered with, it was soiled.
Yeah, okay.
What's happening is the robin is seeing its reflection and trying to drive off the other robin, which really isn't there. It's only an image. So it's going to keep it up while that reflection is there, and it still has that impulse to do it. That's
right.
During the nesting season.
So how do you stop that?
Well, you block the image.
In a car window?
Well, you either you put the car where the bird won't see it, or put a paper bag or a shopping bag over the mirror that the bird first shows up at.
All right. Well, Nancy Castillo, what's the website for Wild Birds Unlimited?
SaratogaSprings.wbu.com.
All right. Now, Rich Guthrie, I know that you have speaking engagements. Let's run them down very quickly before
tonight
we end the program.
Tonight at Coxsackie Library at 6:30 p.m. and then next Thursday at 10 a.m. at the Catskill Senior Citizen Center, Catskill, New York. 10
next
a.m.
stop Broadway for that, huh?
Gone near.
So people get liquored up and come to your shows and heckle?
Only rarely.
Okay.
But we can handle it.
Note to self. Get liquored up and go heckle Rich.
And then if you have an outfit that wants to have a little program on Cuba Birds, let me know.
Okay, Rich Guthrie, always great. And once again, the email address?
RichardPGuthrie@gmail.com.
Fantastic. Do you still have the blog?
I do. TimesUnion.com, yes.
Okay.
Birding blog and the Times Union, the Albany newspaper.
Fantastic job, Rich Guthrie. Nancy Castillo, always nice to have you on the program. Come back anytime. Tomorrow, oh boy, I won't even tell you about tomorrow yet. I'll do some underwriting first. Support comes from Pave Tile, wood and stone, using French artisan techniques to manufacture pre-finished oak floors, decorative and terracotta tile, and importing aged French limestone. Showroom by appointment and online, pavetile.com. Arkell Museum at Canajo Harry presenting Circus Circus, the Beechnut Miniature Circus Exhibition, alongside paintings by John Corbino, Norman Rockwell, and more. ArkellMuseum.org. Hudson Farmers Market, 6th and Columbia Street, Hudson, providing products and seasonal produce from more than 30 growers and producers, Saturdays 9 a.m. to 1 p.m. through November. Hudson Farmer Market, ny.com. And Lathrop Communities, serving older adults in the Quaker tradition for 25 years, independent living in Northampton and East Hampton, Massachusetts, in the heart of the Pioneer Valley, lathrop.kendall.org. Thanks again to Rich Guthrie and Nancy Castillo for being here. Thanks to all of you who called. Apologize to all the folks we didn't get to today. A lot of lines, a lot of calls, a popular guest. All I can say is try to get in earlier next time, and we'll do the best we can for you. Thanks to the amazing Zach Malloy. Did a B-plus job today on the controls. Bruce Herbach answered the calls well and used our new system. Our producer, Jessica Blaustein Marshall. I'm Ray Graff. Tomorrow, it's Cars with Gordon Fricke. Stand by for news.